So last week we established some kind of key concepts, and we're going to do a little bit more of that today. But last week we discussed the concept of meat and milk, basar v'chalav, of combining meat and milk, what the prohibition is and what it's not, the rabbinic prohibition, the Torah prohibition, and then we got into some basic rules that govern this this relationship, this combination of meat and milk. When are they prohibited? How much has to go into one versus the other? We talked about the need for heat in order to create this transfer, right? If there's no heat, there's no transfer of taste, and the transfer of taste is the most important thing. So we talked about how hot does it have to get, and then we also discussed the level of heat, but also the kli rishon versus kli sheni, that if it's in the original vessel, it's cooked in versus a second vessel, that cools it down, and then that will minimize the amount of heat that's there. Okay, and then we discuss at the end some exceptions to when we're not going to be saying something is mavata, something is going to be nullified. Okay, so we're going to do a few more concepts before we get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff. But I think once we have the concepts down, the nitty-gritty stuff will make sense on its own for the most part. We'll have to get into some specific questions, but I think it'll give us a good context. So the next concept we're going to introduce is called not barnat dehetera. Okay. It's not barnat, it's a not barnat dehetera. It's an acronym. Not is in Hebrew, it's an acronym for the letters Nun and Tet, which stands for No Tain Tam, right? Which means transfer of taste. Which we have said is the essence of this whole conversation. The essence of everything is transfer of taste from one to the other. So, not by not dehetera, the transfer of taste, so it's a two-step process. It's the transfer of taste, and then a second transfer of taste for things that are permitted. So what does that mean? So the Shulchan Aruch says in Yoredeya 95.1, fish that was cooked or fried in a meat pot that was washed well and that had no fats stuck to it. Okay, so here's a scenario. So you have what we would call a meat pot. Okay, a pot that's used for meat. Right? Now, he's adding in that it's washed well, and therefore there's no be'en, there's no food itself that's stuck there, and that's going to be relevant. So there's no food, it's only taste, right? The taste trapped within the walls of this pot, right? So we have meat taste trapped in the walls of a pot, and that's what makes it a meat pot, right? Okay. So then I take that meat pot and I cook fish in it, right? The status of fish is it is
parf,
right? Fish is parf, okay? So since fish is neither meat nor dairy, now that I've cooked this fish in this meat pot, what is the status of the fish? Is the fish... is the fish still meat? Sorry. Is the fish still parv, or does it become meat by virtue of the fact that I cooked it in a meat pot or a meat pan?
It becomes meat.
So Norman says it becomes meat. Okay, so let's see. you are allowed to eat it with a meat dish because it was no tain tam bar no tain tam. I made a mistake. I should say a dairy dish. I'm sorry. Of course you can eat it with a meat dish. You can eat it with a dairy dish. Why? Because it is no tain tam bar no tain tam. There's a two-level transfer of taste.
Okay, wait. Can you just clarify?
Yeah.
It should be dairy? Like.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, the second meat should be dairy. That's the entire point.
That's what.
Yeah.
I was like, of course it's...
My entire point... was messed up.
Well,
this is my
translation. We won't forget it. It's a teaching tool.
Yeah, right. This is me translating as I'm translating the Hebrew as I'm reading it. And
right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I don't work as a translator. All right. So I will. I'm going to correct that before I post it online. Let me just. I'm going to note that. All right. So yeah. So if you cook, it's saying that if you cook fish or anything, it can be noodles, right? You cook noodles in a dairy pot, right? That you don't make macaroni and cheese. No cheese in there, just noodles. Noodles are parv, right? I cook noodles in a dairy pot. Can I then serve that those noodles with meat? The Shulchan Aruch says, yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, we can. So, right? Why? Because it's not bar not dead terror. Because now we've had two transfers. We've had the meat transfer its taste into the walls of the pot, and then the meat gets transferred out into something else. It's already so removed from its original source that it's such a weakened taste that we view it as basically irrelevant. Okay? So you ask the question, why in the world do we have meat pots and dairy pots? So this would not apply if I would cook dairy in the meat pot, right? Because here, what do we have? We're cooking meat, putting it into something parv, and then to make that parv thing meat, that we're not going to do. We're not going to go that far. So if I was to cook dairy, right, if I cooked something meat, washed out the pot, and washed out the meat pot, so there's no food on it, but there's only taste of it. So I can't cook dairy in that directly, because that is considered to be, that amount of taste is already making the basar b'chala. But for me to say that I'm going to make something parv into meat, we don't go that far. Okay? Number one, we only say that by hetera, right? We only say that by things that are permitted, meaning I haven't done anything wrong. If I've cooked meat in my meat pot, I haven't done anything wrong. If I then cook noodles in that, I haven't done anything wrong. Right? So, as opposed to, let's say, I accidentally cooked something non-kosher into a pot, or accidentally cooked meat and milk together in a pot, and now there's meat and milk together in that pot, and then I cooked noodles in that pot that was a quote-unquote a treif pot, a non-kosher pot, then we'd say those noodles become non-kosher, because that's not but not the tera. That's not transfer of taste to transfer of taste of permitted foods. That's transfer of taste to transfer of taste of prohibited foods. Okay, so we have a double transfer of taste, but everything that's happened is kosher, right? The only question now is, what's the status of this food? The status of this food is it's still parv. Okay, yeah.
Is the pot that we're talking about benyon or not?
Good question, we'll get to it. Good question. Let's assume for now that it is. But I haven't brought that up yet.
Is there a practical reason for this distinction? Is it so you don't? Is it to minimize the number of pots you need, or is it? I mean, was there a practical reason that
for what
for having a situation where you can cook parv food in a meat pot, not have a separate parv pot?
Oh,
it's not.
This is not for practical reasons. That's purely laying out. In a theoretical world, what's the status of this food? Okay. It's not telling you how many pots you should own.
Yeah.
It's not saying, and we'll see that we shouldn't necessarily do this, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should, right?
But seems kind of, it may be hard to just keep everything straight and why.
No, look, again, you know, we'll get into this later, but it's a good thing. One of my teachers taught us, and we're learning kashrut, he said, there's law and there's policy. Right?
Right.
Just because something is technically okay, it might be terrible policy because it's going to lead to mess-ups and lead to mistakes. And
right.
It's just a bad idea. Right? And, you know, sometimes, you know, but it's important to know if something happens by mistake, now what? Do I have to throw this food out?
Right.
Do I have to kosher this pot? Do I, you know, like, what happens now? So that's an important tool to have, you know, at your disposal.
Now I understand
Why
that's what I wanted.
Yeah. So, I'm not saying to
things
use
happen.
This, but,
no, but it's,
right, things happen.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Things happen, and it's good to know what the
ramifications.
Yeah. What the ramifications? Exactly. You know, and sometimes we're too lenient, and sometimes we're too strict, and sometimes you know we throw away dinner that we spent an hour on and we didn't have to. And you know what? In Jewish law, we care about that. We don't want you to do that. You know, we don't want people to. You know, be it for expense or time or whatever it is, even to kosher something. So there are times we'll say kosher something, but if you don't have to kosher something, we'd rather you not have to. Right? I'm not trying to make life more difficult. Okay. Okay, so that scenario, I'm cooking fish or I'm cooking noodles. Noodles is a good example because something we could you know, relate to. So cooking noodles may even be more of leniency because there's water as a medium, so there's even more transfers, right? There's even more going back and forth. Let's say you just boil water, right? Or eggs are a good example. I boil eggs, right? I make hard-boiled eggs. So I make hard-boiled eggs in a meat pot, and then I want to put in my kids' lunch the next day, and I'm also giving them grilled cheese sandwich. Can I do that? So the answer is, yeah, you could do that, right? That doesn't make the eggs meat. Okay.
Can you do that with an oven?
We got to ovens.
Okay.
Ovens is the end. Ovens is the big finish. The big finish. Yeah.
Could you take those hard-boiled eggs, which you boiled in a meat dish,
and
eat it with a piece of bread with butter on top of it?
Yes. He's saying yes, you could. Yeah. Then maybe you shouldn't, but according to what we've seen so far, you could. Again, we haven't seen the Ramah yet. We've just seen the Shulchan Aruch. You know, we'll see that there's a distinction between Ashkenazim and Sephardim on this point. But yeah. Okay. Okay. If the pot or pan was not washed well, if it has attached to it food, which is more than 1/60 of the fish, it is prohibited to eat with the dairy dish. At that point, if there's food in there, then already it's going to become meat. Now that fish is meat, now those noodles are meat.
And there's a sakana issue too.
Okay, but it's interesting that he doesn't say you have to throw it out because of the sakana issue, even though we don't mix meat and fish, but it doesn't make it treif, you're saying. Right. Okay. So it has to really be a clean pot. Okay. Like we said, this does not apply to non-kosher foods whose tastes were absorbed. And one is not allowed to do this intentionally. It's only telling us what the status of the food is after this was mistakenly done. And this is definitely a big thing for Ashkenazim. There's a distinction, you know, but what does that mean? So it's not saying that we should go around and cook noodles and meat and meat pots and then use that in dairy, but the status of that food is it's still par. Yeah. So the question is, so the distinction between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. Sephardim say that once it's done, and you're not gonna. Okay. So let's say you thought you're cooking your noodles in a dairy pot. It's really a meat pot. And now what's the status? That status is it's parv, don't worry about it. From the point that you've cooked it, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Ashkenazim say from the point that you've, let's say you've made macaroni and cheese, you've already mixed the cheese into the noodles, right? That's the point when Ashkenazim say, don't worry about it. Meaning, when there's no going back. I mean, if I made the noodles, and they're just sitting there, so okay, so just don't put cheese on it. Okay, they're parv, but still, don't mix them with cheese. So, it's not going to make you meat, it's not going to, quote-unquote, make you fleshy, where you're going to have to wait between meat and milk. So, Ashkenazim are a little bit stricter in that they'll only say you can go ahead and eat it once it's already been accidentally mixed with the cheese and now there's literally no going back. There's no other thing I can do with it. It's dairy at this point. So, once I've mixed it with dairy, okay, and it's fine.
But that's only if it's by mistake.
By mistake. Right. Intentionally, you're not... You shouldn't intentionally cook the noodles in a meat pot and then make macaroni and cheese with those noodles. I mean, that shouldn't be your plan from the outset, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, meaning, all your dairy pots are dirty, your meat pot is clean.
Right, exactly.
You're saying to yourself, I could wash it, or I could use this system, right? So that's where, you shouldn't do that, right? You shouldn't do that, right? Okay.
And then
Sephardi would also agree you shouldn't do that.
Okay.
The only thing is, if you've done it by accident, and you've already made the noodles in the meat pot, once you've already made the noodles, according to Sephardim, you can mix it with cheese. All right, you made the mistake, but that's all right.
So it's a step
beforehand. It's a step beforehand, where they say, don't worry about it. Ashkenazim say, don't worry about it once it's already been mixed with the cheese. Because beforehand, just find another use for those noodles, or, I don't know, do something else, put some vegetables in there, and, you know... Okay. And do something else. Okay.
Sloppy Joe.
Exactly. Go Sloppy Joe. There's other alternatives. Right. But according to everybody, those noodles are not going to be meat per se. Right? They're not going to be meat, but they might be, what we'll call cooked in meat utensils. So therefore, they're not meat itself. We just tell you, don't eat them with dairy directly. Or don't mix them with dairy directly. Okay. Any questions on that before we go on to the next point? Okay. The Ashkenazi custom. Now, I'm adding Ashkenazi because this is, like we talked about last week, the Rama, who adds in the Ashkenazi perspective. It's implied that's the Ashkenazi custom. But an Ashkenazi custom is to prohibit this lichachila, but to permit it b'diavad. That's what I was just describing. I didn't translate them because they're really hard to translate in shorthand. But lichachila means before the fact, and b'diavad means after the fact. Okay, so doing something lichachila means when you have your wits about you and you haven't done anything yet, and you're thinking, should I do this? Don't do it if you don't have to. B'diavad is once it's already been done, what's the status of this food? Do I have to throw it out? If I've already mixed it with cheese, do I have to throw it out? So the Rama says, no, you don't have to throw it out. It's okay. It's not the end of the world. So this is only in regard to eating with an actual meat or dairy product. But if it's only in a vessel that is meat or dairy, then it is permitted fully. So for example, let's say I cooked... a good example. So I cooked my noodles in a meat pot, and then I poured them out into a dairy strainer, right? Let's say you have a dairy strainer, right? Or I pour it out into a dairy bowl. Then we're never going to say that it's going to affect the other bowl, or that now, this food is not kosher in any way. Meaning, it's 100% fine. At that point, it's still 100% fine.
What about the bowl and the strainer?
The bowl, the strainer, everything's fine.
Yeah?
Everything's fine.
Even if you pour the hot water directly in?
Even if you pour the hot water directly in, everything's fine. It's not to Tara. It wasn't, certainly if it wasn't done on purpose, but even if it wasn't on purpose, we're not going to say it's going to trafe up the strainer.
But you haven't mixed some dairy in with the...
No.
Right. All you've,
you're just straining, right?
All you've done is strained water that was cooked in a meat pot and poured it into a dairy strainer. And from last week's concepts, it's not even Kli Rishon anymore. It's best case, the most it can be is Eroy Kli Rishon. It's poured, probably it's Kli Sheni already. And it's, so at that point, we're not going to say you have to throw out your strainer. And we're not going to say the noodles become not kosher because it's gone from the meat pot to the dairy pot. Now it's got both mixed into the noodles.
Are the noodles definitely still not parv at that point?
Noodles are still parv, yeah. Yeah.
What's the rationale?
You come late every week and then you ask these questions.
Sorry.
You do this to me every week, Leonard.
All right. No, but in reality, you don't just pour hot water. You pour hot water with the content.
Right.
With the noodles.
Right.
So it doesn't...
Doesn't matter.
The pot and the...
Does not chafe up the pot, does not chafe up the strainer, will not chafe up the bowl. There's
assuming the pot was well cleaned.
Yes, so if there's like meat in the pot and it was boiled and then I pour it out, yeah, that's a different story. No, you're right. It's a good point.
But,
no.
But not meat that I had meat in there, but left over from when I last used
it. Exactly. So if I made like a meat sauce and it was still there's still like stuff there. Right. Again, yeah. Then yes. And then I cooked it and then it that would trafe up everything. So, but like that's what you said from the outset. From the outset, if you do that, those noodles are really meat because there's real meat mixed in with it. Yeah. Yeah.
So wash your dishes.
Yeah. But then we assume your dishes we assume if we don't know either way, meaning let's say this happens, you're like, I assume it was washed. I don't know. We actually assume people wash their dishes. It's a nice thing we do.
Does it depend on the type of dish?
I mean, people wash their dishes before they cook with them. They scan it.
But is it different to say if it was a porcelain dish as opposed to a cast iron dish or something like that?
Right.
I mean, I guess there's certain dishes that have, like, in the corners, it's hard to get out, little things.
But porous.
Oh, no, we're not even getting to that. No.
So what's a porous?
No, because porous is an issue. That's only the taste that's inside. And we're saying the taste inside is already so watered down that it's not going to affect it. Mm. We're only talking about real food that's still left in the pot. That's, you know, real scum in there, real stuff in there. Yeah. Okay, so that's point number one. And that is the custom, all right? So that's clear. Also, if it was merely placed on a vessel of the other type, then you can still eat it. So let's say... I guess that means, you put it on top of another vessel. Right? Let me see the Hebrew. Trust my translation fully. It's a weird thing, but I can understand the Hebrew much better than the translation. Because it's too watered down. What's this one? Sorry. Okay. Okay, so we say, let's read the Hebrew. והמנהג לא אסור לך אכילה ודיעבד מותר בכל עניין ודווקא לאכול עם חלב והבשר עצמו אבל ליתן בכלי שלהם מותר לך אכילה וכן נהג וכן אם לא נתבש לו או נצלו תחילה רק עלו בכלי של בשר וכן אם לא נתבש לו או נצלו תחילה. So let's say you didn't cook it or grill it first. רק עלו בכלי של בשר. So if you merely... I left that little part of it. That's what didn't make much sense. So if you merely put it into the vessel of the other one, doesn't make it treif also. So even if you put... If you pour cottage cheese into a pot, and it's still if it's not hot, and it didn't cook it at all, then you can clean it out. Doesn't make the pot treif. You know,
okay.
even the cottage cheese is still fine because there's no heat to transfer anything, right?
Even so, if the pot has once been hot at some point and cooked,
if it's not hot enough to cook, not 110 degrees certainly. Right. If it's cold, definitely.
So you could have used it before for cooking meat, but it's clean and it's cold.
Right.
So at that point, it's okay to, well,
if you do it by accident,
it's
just wash it out.
Okay,
that's
I gotcha.
It. Yeah. Just wash it out and then you're fine. Doesn't treif up the pot. Right. Okay. And then he gets into the next point, which we're going to get into. Also, if the pot or pan had not been used in 24 hours, the custom is to fully permit it. Okay? So to this point, what have we been talking about? We've been talking about... situations where it had been cooked within 24 hours. But let's say it had not been cooked within 24 hours. I hadn't used this pot for 24 hours. So then the food inside, the taste inside of the pot is what? Is pugum, right? It means it's rancid. It's no longer good. Since it's no longer good, it's no longer going to be considered a mixture of meat and milk. And therefore, it's fine. So even the Ashkenazim would say, if I haven't used this meat pot for 24 hours, and then I cook noodles in it, and then I look at the noodles and say, oh my gosh, what have I done? I can still make macaroni and cheese with it.
But you couldn't cook cheese in that pot.
No, that I can't do.
Okay.
I can't cook cheese in that pot, but I can pour it out and then take those noodles and make macaroni and cheese.
But not intentionally.
I shouldn't intentionally cook the noodles in that pot, but once I've done that, right before, I mean, we had the tiers of of when have you gone too far? Mm-hmm. So we'll pull back a step, right? We'll pull back a step and say, once it's been done, I mean, once you've already cooked those noodles, okay, it's happened, you shouldn't have done it, but what's the status of the noodles? Those noodles are totally parf. There's no real meat in there. Okay?
So what's... confused about the distinction of more than 24 hours, and it seems like it's the same before 24 hours and after 24.
No, because if it's before 24 hours, then we'll say that if you've cooked those noodles, you shouldn't mix them with cheese. Okay. Right? Or eat them with a cheese meal.
So the Ashkenazis have a distinction.
Right, the Ashkenazis have... Right, well, this is the Ramah. This is the Ashkenazic... Right. So the Ashkenazic custom, which... before 24 hours is a little bit stricter, pulls away that strictness when it comes to if it's been more than 24 hours since it was cooked. It adds in that stipulation. Okay? So that's why that's why we went through all these concepts last week, because now you see them all coming together. So now we've got the 24 hour issue, we've got the heat issue, we've got all these different factors. And so that's why it's important to know the concepts, because kosher is usually about like four or five core concepts that you have to apply to specific circumstances. And it takes time to figure out how exactly to apply them. But the more you familiarize yourself and the more you think it through, wait, can I do this? What about, you know, then it just makes it a lot easier, at least for me, to conceptualize it instead of making a list of rules.
Is it 24 hours? I'm sorry. But it's like reason why it's 24 hours? It's kind of like there's a half-life to
it's
a factor there.
It's like that. That's
I'm just curious.
That's kind of the objective time given to that. If something's left out, at what point is it universally not edible anymore? So we'll say 24 hours. If you leave out food for 24 hours, it's universally rancid. To 12 hours, most people won't eat it, but I don't know. Maybe. You know? So you ever left noodles out and they kind of get harder and harder over time? You kind of look at them and you're like, how long, at what point do they become like just a little too gross, right?
They never last that
long. They don't last. But so they don't last 24 hours. But I'm saying,
no way,
meaning at 24 hours we're comfortable in saying whatever we cooked, no one would eat. That's like the, you know, and it's an easy cutoff point. 24 hours, fine. I mean, there's more to it than that, but I'm just, you know, okay, to remember. Yeah.
I have a question. So, something that's cooked in dairy equipment.
Right.
That implies that there's been less than 24 hours between that particular thing being used for dairy.
Right.
And that part of thing that's cooked in it.
Right.
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 So, like, when you see, like, industrial kosher textures that say dairy equipment on them.
Right.
It's probably just, like, possibly dairy equipment because the runs are going
to
be going for more than 24 hours.
Well, but remember this. This is the important thing to remember. It doesn't mean 24 hours since the dairy was cooked. It means it had a 24-hour gap where nothing was cooked.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
Right? So if I use the meat pot at 6 p.m. Wednesday night for meat, right? I make spaghetti and meatballs Wednesday night at 6 p.m. And then 5 p.m. on Thursday night, I just boil water in that same pot, the clock starts again. It's a new 24 hours. Because the food kind of gets regenerated, it gets cooked again, right? So now it's not as rancid. So that's the thing. So the question for those, do they have a 24-hour window where they stop it altogether? If they go from dairy right to the parv, then it's
dairy as long as you're using it.
Exactly. Yeah, until you... Right, exactly.
That's an important point.
Yeah, that's an important point. I think I mentioned it last week, but it's important to say it again, yeah. Yeah, so the clock only stops right at that point. And, you know, when in doubt, you know, if you're really not, you know, if you know you use it the day before and you can't remember it today, stop using it at 3 or 4 o'clock, all right, so then you should probably be a little bit more strict on it. But if you legitimately think, I don't think I used this yesterday, or I'm almost positive I didn't use this yesterday, then, you know,
but you could be lenient. But you're only making that calculation if you made a mistake to begin with, so it's not like you're planning...
Exactly. Yeah. I'm saying, but if you're trying to remember, oh gosh, when did I use last year's pot? Oh, what did it? You know? Okay. Well, I used it to mix. You know, I used it to, you know, boil vegetables yesterday. But when did I use meat last? Oh my god. Yeah. So, you know, do the best you can with it. It's an imperfect science, you know, because we're dealing with human error.
Separate pots.
What?
Most people who keep kosher just have separate pots. Separate.
No, you're right. But we're getting into mistakes are part of the game.
The leftovers.
What?
Leftovers.
leftovers. What do you mean? Like,
I think that's when this will come into play, when you have leftovers. Even if you need it with tonight's dinner, even though it's...
So I cooked the potato kugel.
Oh, that's right.
And now we're... And now I want potato kugel and blintzes.
Right.
No, I understand.
That's very... Well, marathon.
Right. Okay. Now you're saying. Yeah. So in those circumstances, well, that's an interesting question, because there's a bidyevid. Let's say when I cooked it. How about this? Let's say I cook a bunch of noodles for a kugel for a soup, right? My intention is to only use it for meat. Mm-hmm. But I end up cooking so many, I realize I have leftover noodles. Mm-hmm. And I want to use it for something else now, right? So can I then give it to the kids and put cottage cheese on it, and now it's lunch, right? So is that bidyevid? Because I didn't make any mistakes here.
But what was your intent? Is that...
Right. Meaning, right. I didn't make a mistake, but... So, yeah, that's... You should probably... Yeah, that's a case where if I hadn't used it in 24 hours, I could see it, but probably not a good idea to use it with cheese. Yeah. Again, you're not going to... That's not going to be the first thing Hashem brings up to you after 120 years. If you were to do such a thing, right? Right? It wouldn't mean it's a non-kosher kitchen, right? It wouldn't mean any of those things. It's not... It's not the worst thing you could do. But, you know... Okay. All right. The next one, this is an important thing, and this comes up in a few different categories. This is another concept, Davar Harif. Davar Harif is a tough one, and I'll explain why. Okay, so the Ramah continues, it's the same Ramah as before. I just broke it up into different sections because of different concepts. However, if the food item, meaning the food item that we are currently cooking, not that was absorbed into the pot, and that's based on the Shach, and a 95-7. Meaning, let's say I'm cooking, what's something with onions? What's something with meat and onions? Give me something good with meat and onions.
Liver.
Liver and onions. Oh, no, I'm saying par with onions.
Oh.
Yeah, par with onions. What?
Potato salad?
Am I cooking potato salad?
What?
Potato.
No, I'm cooking the onions. I want to cook the onions. I'm grilling onions. I don't know. What if I'm grilling onions? What?
Fish and onions.
Liver.
Yeah, that's
meat.
You told me. No, I want to say par. Par with onions. Par with onions in. Okay, so let's say, okay, fish and onions, whatever. Okay. Grilling onions. Okay. So I'm cooking something in a meat pot that has onions in what I'm making. Okay? Then, if the food item contains a davar harif, a sharp-tasting item, then even if the pot hasn't been used in 24 hours, the food is completely prohibited unless there's 60 times more of the food being cooked. So, this concept of davar harif, sharp foods, has a very unique status. Sharp foods make disgusting food taste fantastic, and according to Jewish law. So... it makes this food that normally we look at and say this is gross. It's this food that's been, held into the walls of this pot. So we look at that and we say it's now been regenerated into something wonderful. Okay, and now it is as if it is within 24 hours. Okay, so that's how we look at it. So the status gets moved back into... So basically what the Rama has done is he kind of set the bar... right, so first the Rama set the bar a little bit higher, right? So the Sephardim were here, right? And the Ashkenazim were here, right? So the Ashkenazim were a little bit stricter in saying that... that the point of no return is when once it's already been mixed with cheese, then you say, okay, it's too late. Just take it already. But if you've cooked, you remember, say, if you cooked the noodles in the meat pot, you haven't mixed it with cheese yet, then we'll say, you know what, don't mix it with cheese. However, if the pot hadn't been used in 24 hours, then we'll say even at that point, once you've cooked the noodles, if it hasn't been used for 24 hours, use it with cheese, right? We lowered the bar then. However, right? However, right? If this isn't Jewish thinking, right? What else? What is? So, however, if what you cooked had something called a sharp food, and we'll define that as best we can, had a sharp food in the mixture, now it gets ramped back up as if it was 24 hours. Okay, I mean, as even though the pot hadn't been used in 24 hours, we look at it as if it was used within 24 hours.
So the Harif basically kashered it.
The Harif...
No, it doesn't kasher it.
It makes the food that we normally look at and say is disgusting, and we say it's edible. The taste is now edible.
It reverses the Ben Yoma.
It reverses the Ben Yoma, right. Or negates the Ben Yoma, however you want to look at it.
Well, that explains why the Sephardim have a lower standard, because everything is Harif.
Very good.
Everything is
spicy for them.
Yeah.
So they have. We can make the distinction, but the 1,000 times. So
but once again, it depends.
And they make just rice. They can have rice, you know.
The curry.
In this case, yeah. The matter of the pot has been carefully washed before.
Always matters. That always matters. Yeah, like we said, that always matters. Yeah.
Would cinnamon fall within?
All right, I give a lot of examples here. I will stipulate right from the outset. There's a tremendous amount of discussion and disagreement as to what is considered a davar harif. The main items that pretty much everyone assumes are davar harif that are used a lot are garlic and onions. Those are like the top two. So if you're using garlic and onions, that's across the board considered davar harif. Those are used a lot. I'm sorry?
Is some vinegar in it?
Yeah, so some people consider vinegar, but if it's mixed in, okay. I would say ask, if it's something that's not, you know, the clear things are, you know, leek is definitely an example that's given, horseradish, olives, really sour fruit and vegetables like lemons, sour apples, pickled vegetables, sauerkraut, something very salted like salted herring, I include here pepper and sharp paprika. There's different types of paprika, right? There's like the sweeter one, then there's the, you know, the cayenne pepper, you know, that kind of stuff. Or what's the one they use for shawarma? What's that? Cumin? Right, cumin, right?
So it's not just all spices? I mean, there's not.
No, but some spices are very mild. I wouldn't call.
Oregano?
What? Right, I mean, like I wouldn't say thyme or rosemary or davar harif, you know? What?
Curry.
I would say is, right. But certain spices are very mild.
Dillweed?
We don't need to have like a whole
How about cinnamon?
Yeah, I wouldn't call cinnamon, I don't know, it's. I mean, it's got a kick to it, but it's
supporting quick rise with cinnamon.
Yeah, I'm saying, I wouldn't say that's an across-the-board davar harif, definitely not. If you taste cinnamon, it's a little bitter. It's not, you know, it's not really sweet. But I wouldn't say it's a davar harif is something that's like an intense flavor that some overpowers the things that it.
Fennel.
You know,
chili.
What?
Fennel.
Sure.
I don't know fennel.
Chili.
Chili powder would be all right. We don't need to. Again, I can't go through everything. I can only give you the definites and my sense of, you know, Stevie, like a sense of. You know, if this does come up, you know, I would say ask the question, you know, call me up and we can discuss it. I can't go through every scenario and, you know, and certain things, again, there's so much disagreement about, a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on it. So
that means you cook something with one of these spices, even though it's been around for 24 hours.
We look at it as if it's not been around for 24 hours.
But right? Salt itself is not. Just salt alone?
It's interesting because you think salt alone would go, but
it doesn't look,
yeah.
It's like salt.
I didn't
hair.
Because salt probably because salt dissolves so quickly.
Okay.
You know that it, you know,
okay.
Doesn't really impact, you know, maybe quite as much. So I don't know. I didn't see that salt in and of itself. And then, you know, in the book here, it gave a whole list and you know, I was going through a lot of different books and different things to try to get like the best. The widest glossary of things I could come up with here. But I didn't see salt, just in and of itself. So here he gives a bunch of examples, and this is the back of the Art Scroll, Laws of Kashrut book. which is definitely very good. And so he just gives the different sources that quote different examples, but not necessarily, but that they might be the only one who brings it up. So the Magen Avraham says an etrog, and the Isser V'Heter says sour plums, and so the Magen Avraham says strong vinegar, right? You know, whiskey, if you cook with like whiskey or like a real, you know. But, you know, some say wine, but most red wines I wouldn't necessarily
cognac
say.
Would do.
Yeah, if it was a really like, sharp liquor. Yeah, but if it was like a mild red wine.
But you know, Ashkenazi would call sharp cheese harif.
You're really into this, the Sephardi Ashkenazi taste situation. All right. Okay. Any question then on this before we go to the next topic? Okay. Zeya. Zeya means steam. And the question is, and this really gets into ovens, why would an oven be an issue? Okay? If I'm not cooking the two things together, right? I'm not making a veal parmesan. Does that make sense? Veal parmesan? Mm-hmm. There would be cheese in there, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not making veal parmesan. I am cooking a lasagna, and I'm cooking a meatloaf, and they're not touching, and they're in the same oven, but they're side by side. So why would that be a problem, right? I'm not cooking them together. So the issue is Zeya. Okay? What is Zeya? So here's the example here given in the Shulchan Aruch, and we'll see there's another example given as well. So if one puts a dairy dish in the oven on top of a meat dish, the steam from the bottom dish rises, is absorbed into the upper dish, and makes it prohibited. So we see here that merely the steam from one getting into the other, it's as if you like poured the liquid into it. We're basically saying that steam is the equivalent of the liquid of the other. Okay?
Does that makes the food prohibited? Does it require the pot needs to be re-kosher?
As of now, it would seem yes. Meaning, if it's going to make the food that, then pretty soon the pot's going to be that because it's being cooked in it. There's heat, you know. At that point, your goose is cooked. Okay. So the steam from one is as if you've poured hot liquid from one onto the other, which we all would assume is going to make it, you know, treif. So you make a basar v'chalav. So the Rama adds, this is only if the upper dish was uncovered and the steam rose up and reached the open pot. Okay, so here we see stipulation number one, which is going to be very, very important for ovens. If the top food item, that was the dairy dish, was covered on top, so the steam didn't have a way to actually get in. So it seems like it can't go in through the pot into the food. If I cover it up, and they're not able to actually kiss, right, then it's all kosher, okay? So use protection, okay? If you use protection, then you're fine.
So needless to say, side by side would be totally fine.
No, but side by side...
Covered?
So right now, but side by side, if they're both open, then they're good. Right, right. Then
if
they're...
If one's closed and one's open...
Well,
if they're both closed,
if one's, well, this case here is one's closed and one is open.
Right,
so in that scenario,
yeah.
Right, so it's top and bottom, but we, you know, we, it seems the issue is that the steam of one can get into the other.
Right.
So that's, okay.
That's only inside the oven, not on the...
not in the burners, right. Just in the oven, not in burners, right. And burners, right, we're assuming that it just dissipated.
It's open space.
Right, so burners, we're not going to have an issue. You can cook meat in one burner, dairy in the other burner at the same time, and it's not going to be a problem. Right.
Why would you be able to cook, like, let's say, meat on one burner, and then, like, later in the day, cook dairy on that same burner, whereas in an oven... No, but in an oven, you shouldn't really do that, though, should you?
But we'll get into why you shouldn't do it with an oven, but that is because it's trapped in the oven.
Oh, okay.
Right, the... Certain things get trapped in the oven. The burner, it's just open air, so it's just dissipating. Right.
And microwave oven?
We'll get to microwaves too.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and also the two dishes must be close enough that the steam will be yatzel, let it bow, when it reaches the other. So that's the concept from last week. The steam, when it reaches the other one, has to be hot enough. It's basically, we're looking at it like we're pouring hot liquid that's yatsa, let it bow. We said 110 degrees from one to the other. So if they're so far apart that, you know, for whatever reason, it's not going to get hot enough, or it's not hot enough in there, so then that won't be an issue. If not, it's permitted. However, we should avoid these situations whenever possible. Okay? Because this gets messy. All right. So here we just established that zeya, that steam, can go from one to the other for cooking two things at once. But how do we know that zeya, that the steam, let's say I cook a meat dish open, and steam goes everywhere, right? And fills the oven, I take it out, and then an hour later, the oven cools down, and I want to put something else in. I want to put a dairy dish and leave it uncovered, right? So how do we know that steam remains in there? So I guess we could assume, if you look at like a big old pot, and just like the steam would remain in a big pot, you can't cook, you know, you can't go cook dairy into a meat pot. So in essence, it's the same concept. So here the Ramah adds a little bit later, Kuf Ches 108.1, that food cooked in an oven previously for non-kosher food becomes non-kosher when there is zeya. So that context there is that if non-kosher food is cooked in an oven, you can't then put kosher food in. It will then make it non-kosher because we assume that the trapped zeya, the trapped steam, remains, you know, potent enough to then kind of go back into it.
But now, if it's covered?
What?
The kosher food is covered.
So if it's covered, then it seems that we're okay. Right. We'll get to that a little bit. Now, a question came up in modern times about vented ovens, right? We have vented ovens. Does any steam really remain? So Moshe Feinstein dealt with this in 1954. And in his response to Yerodea, Volume 1, Tshuva number 40, so he felt that no, it's as much as vented, the smell remains, the odor remains, the steam remains inside the oven enough that you have to be concerned about it. Now there are definitely some poskim who are more lenient and said that no, we can assume that all of the steam dissipates and leaves through the vent. But there's a vast majority of the major sages of the time definitely felt like there's something to be concerned about. So Moshe Feinstein gives so two ways that you can use one oven for both meat and dairy. Number one is the food is covered. And this is the simplest thing. If you declare the oven as X, the oven is meat, then you can cook dairy in that oven as long as it's covered. Right? Or vice versa. That's the simplest approach. Okay? That you can do. So you just declare it, and if you make a mistake, then you kosher it. Okay? You made a mistake. So if by accident, you know, that one time you put the lasagna and you forgot to cover the lasagna, okay, kosher the oven, you know. You probably have to throw out that lasagna if it had been used for meat within 24 hours. But what if there's onions in the lasagna? Okay.
when you say cover, like, does it mean?
Just means put some aluminum foil on top. Just to cover the top.
Okay.
Doesn't mean wrap it around. Doesn't mean like double wrap it.
Double wrap, okay.
Nothing like that. Okay. Just put something on top. Okay. So it avoids any direct contact that would come onto the food itself, right? So that's the easiest thing. In theory, if it's been 24 hours since the oven was used at all, you could, in theory, then, let's say you use the oven for meat. So if you haven't used the oven in 24 hours, in theory, you could then use it for dairy uncovered. But that's bad practice. Could be fine, bad practice, bad policy. It's going to lead to mistakes, going to lead to problems, bad idea. So I wouldn't recommend doing that. I would recommend declaring it for one, always covering for the other one on that.
And how
prevents husbands from making mistakes.
And what about koshering in between? How difficult is that?
So koshering depends. If you have a self-clean oven, you just self-clean it.
Right.
That's it. If you don't have a self-clean oven, you better really want to kosher that oven. It's usually quite a pain. Yeah.
What about putting it on 500 degrees for like an hour?
So the only issue though, you have to re-clean it first because there can still remain enough real food particles. If you change out the easiest thing is if you clean it decently well, pretty well, because you also got a lot of nooks and crannies in the oven door and all around. If you change out the oven racks, really clean it, and then like turn it on 500 degrees for 2 hours, then you'll be fine. But it's usually not worth doing that. That you only want to do that if you make a mistake. Even the self cleaning, you know, you're not going to want to do that every time you want to cook a lasagna. That's not going to happen. It's not practical. Now, if you have two different ovens, some people have two ovens, top to bottom, then just one's this, one's that, and that's the end of the story. And then if you really have a heavy load of cooking, so then you just cook, you know, let's say, you know, the meat and, you know, meat and dairy, but you've got a big meal you're preparing, it's meat, so then just, you know, cover, you know, cook in the dairy oven, cover the meat, you know, put the meat dish in, cover it, and then you're okay. That's the simplest thing. Yeah.
You have your meat oven, you have your lasagna covered,
right,
and cheese boils over and drips out, then you can start over again.
You gotta kosher the oven. It's not gonna make the lasagna trafe because the lasagna is still covered. Nothing's getting in. The lasagna would be fine, but yeah, then you'd have to kosher the oven. Okay. Yeah. If it really, you know, really.
What if got you out. Put a? Because this is happening to us. The thing. What if you put a
foil down
underneath it?
Yeah. If you do that, you
And you catch the.
You catch the droppings and take it out. The droppings.
It'll be steaming in the oven at that point. So.
At that point, I would wait 24 hours and you'd be okay. I would clean it, wait 24 hours, and you wouldn't have to kosher again. But I wouldn't use it for 24 hours.
What if you're cooking something that's parv in the oven? It's a meat oven.
Oh, good. We'll get to that. Good question. Good question.
Then
good question.
Serve that with dairy.
Good question. We'll get to that. Good
question. In general, if you cook something open, if you want to cook something the other way, you have to wait 24 hours.
Well, if you cover, you don't have to wait 24 hours.
But if you cook lasagna open, and then if you want to cook meat, you should wait 24 hours if it's cooked.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't recommend doing that. I recommend declaring it one, and then if you really had to, if you really, really had to, you know, I don't know, let's say a turkey or something that you have to cook open, that makes sense, right? Sorry, I'm the worst to give the practical example. But yeah, you can't cook a turkey covered, right?
There's a portion of time that you usually have to brown it.
Yeah, exactly, right?
But you can cover it.
There are all sorts of ways.
You can cook it covered.
If you want to brown it,
Okay.
It's a browning issue.
Deep frying.
Maybe we should all just buy a turkey.
Yeah, just deep fry your turkey, you're fine. I agree. Have you ever had deep fried turkey? Have you had deep fried turkey? Oh, I've had deep fried turkey.
Doesn't the synagogue have a deep fryer?
Not for turkey.
You can't do that outside. That's dangerous.
Oh, no. It's when we were in Houston.
That's dangerous.
And Texas deep fry everything. So we had this friend, and it was basically, it looked like a metal garbage can. Uh-huh. But he, I don't know if it was a garbage can. He called it a large deep fryer. I think, I don't know what it was exactly. And he invited us over to watch, and like they use peanut oil.
Oh.
And they just, and there's like a little thermometer tells you when it gets, and then 20 minutes, the whole turkey's done. 20 minutes, and it's fantastic. So anyway, I can say I've had a deep fried turkey. Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, every year, like Thanksgiving time, you hear these stories of like, you know, man in Upper Michigan with first degree burns all over his body because he tried to deep fry his turducken after 7 beers, you know?
Yeah.
Because you got to deep fry your turducken. Yeah.
Turducken.
Right, so.
It's so too heavy.
Yeah, because it's like, it's dropping in. It's like, I can't believe it. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Bum, 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 bum. All right, so what were we up to? What were we just saying?
The ovens. Oh, microwave oven?
We'll get to the microwaves. Okay, par foods. Let's go to par foods. So the second stipulation that the Rama adds in is dry foods. If a food is dry, then it doesn't create zeya. It doesn't create steam. Okay? Now, it's interesting. So it seems that we assume that the food that you're making has to also create steam in order to have a connection of steams. Okay, so if you create something that's dry that doesn't create steam, it's not going to then bring out the steam from around it, right? Because it's almost like the steam from the food you're making goes down to the walls of the oven, reawakens that theme. They connect. They, you know, and then they come back together into that food. So if you cook something that's dry that doesn't create steam, it's not going to be a problem. Again, it's kind of like the Dover Harif issue. What is a dry food? Goodness. Anything with liquid is not a dry food. But what, you know, so what it, you know, cooking challah is a dry food. That's probably the best example, right?
Even though there's liquid in the dough?
Yeah, so I mean, there's liquid in everything, right? I mean, nothing's 100% dry. But if it doesn't create a lot of steam, and if it's really, I think that's the best example we have. Baking, real baking.
What about like a chicken nugget?
like a frozen food chicken nugget?
Yeah.
A theoretical meal.
A theoretical meal for a 22-year-old male. Yeah. Or a 6-year-old kid.
I'm with you.
Do you get the we get the dinosaur steak. The kids love the dinosaur steak.
I don't get the real chicken ones. I get the dairy ones.
Dairy or parv? Vegetarian.
No,
they're
the
dairy.
Stars.
Yeah, the Morningstar.
Oh, they're actually dairy?
I might have actually made a mistake a long time ago. But
dairy.
I'm not thinking.
The dairy, but they're like, they're like all tofu or something? What are they? What are they?
Soy.
But they're
just soy.
But they're OD. Good.
They can't create it. It can't create a lot of steam, right? That's probably very dry.
I don't imagine it.
I would think, again, it's case by case. My sense of that would be a pretty dry food, yeah.
Okay, so afterwards I just put it on like 500 for like an hour and a half, and I was like, for sure.
No, what this is saying is you wouldn't even have to do that.
But you wouldn't have to do that.
You wouldn't have to do that. Meaning, in theory, you could, if you're, let's say you declare your oven is dairy, so you cooked open foods dairy all the time, right? And even within 24 hours you did that, and then you made challah, you could serve that challah at your Friday night dinner if you had meat. Because since it's a dry food, it's not going to awaken the steam from the previous food that was cooked. So in that scenario, so in your dairy chicken nugget scenario, I think you're going to be okay. You're not going to have to cut your oven for that, I would think. Yeah. So, I mean, it's something you have to be pretty convinced, you know. So, I saw in the OU, the someone who authored an article about this. Says he went around and asked all these rabbis. He asked that his three questions were pizza, blintzes, and cheesecake. Are those dry foods? Because to him, those were like on the fence, you know. Because they have cheese, but...
None of them are dry.
What? So those we felt were on the fence. So those he said,
it's a deep dish versus flat. Yeah.
They're right. But even the flatter one, again, it creates some because of the cheese, but, you know. Sure. So that's already some. That's already some
vegetable
steam.
On a,
what?
You can have, like, tomatoes on a pizza that seem wet. Anyway.
Well, it creates some steam. I mean, sure. Yeah, like I said, it's a very hard thing to define. Okay. So, you know, just make sure if you're just baking, then it really isn't creating steam. You know, chocolate chip cookies, not even that doesn't really create steam.
How about a cake?
A cake doesn't create a lot of steam. No, if it's really a drier cake,
like
doesn't.
Behind,
you know. I wouldn't think that creates a lot of steam. To me, that's pretty dry. I don't know.
The moisture of the dough has to evaporate. So
it always doesn't. There's, you know, in challah too, right? That's what you're. I mean, you're always doing something. There's always some moisture in there for your. Cooking vegetables, it's you know, some moisture. So if it's a drier food, it doesn't create a lot of steam enough to. So it's definitely something to be aware of. It's a hard thing to apply. It's a hard thing to use. Better safe than sorry on it. But I think challah is the best example because challah you can't make challah cover it, right? So if you're dairy, if your oven is dairy and you want to make challah for Shabbos. Again, I would recommend wait 24 hours before you use the oven, then you're definitely okay, just to be safe. But for every reason you can't, I think you could, you know, you can definitely rely on that. All right, yeah.
So the oven is different than a pot, then? So with a pot, you can't do it intentionally, but the oven, you can do it intentionally?
And... Yeah, because we're saying, because there's no direct contact, that's the thing. Because you can't avoid direct contact with a pot or a pan. The food's touching the thing that the meat is in. Here, it's, you know, it's suspended in this entity, you know, the meat vapors are trapped in the walls of the oven, which is not actually touching the food. Now, the question comes up about the racks, because doesn't doesn't the vapors get stuck in the racks, and the racks are touching. So here, I mean, we're not too concerned about the racks. Some are, there's definitely some postgame who are worried if there's food that, like, drips onto the racks, right? Or food drips out. You know, in general, if food drips out down, say you cook meat open, it's a meat oven, and there's some, like, real meat juices that drop down, you should try to clean it if you're going to use it for dairy, especially open. Even after 24 hours, it's a good thing to clean it.
I thought you said if you cooled meat open, you shouldn't cook dairy open after 24 hours.
You could. You could. I'm saying I don't think it's a great idea, but you could. In a pinch, you could.
But if you cook something parf...
Right.
I have a meat oven, and I cook fish in it, for example.
Okay.
Could I then... And the fish is not covered.
Right.
Can I serve that fish with a dairy meal?
Within 24 hours? No. Okay. You couldn't. Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. If you cover it, you could. If you don't... If you cook your fish uncovered in the meat oven... And the meat oven had been used in 24 hours. You could not use that fish. It doesn't become meat per se, but you couldn't use it. Some of you might even say it goes as far as say it's meat, but you certainly cannot eat it with a dairy meal. Definitely not. Yeah.
But if you had waited 24 hours between the meat and cooking the fish,
then you could.
Okay.
Right. Right. And I even say for 24 hours since it cooled down, right?
Okay. Meaning.
And again, the same rules would apply as we said before. So if you cooked meat open, and then you cooked fish 12 hours later, and then 18 hours later that you wanted to cook dairy, it's not 24 hours yet, right? The clock only starts 24 hours where there's no heat in that oven, or not enough heat. You know, it's under 110 degrees, which in an oven is basically, you know, cooled down completely. Okay, microwaves. So microwaves work a little bit differently. the major difference with microwaves is obviously they're a lot smaller. Microwaves bring out the moisture in everything, right? That's the whole point, is they heats up the water particles within the food. So no matter what you cook, there's going to be steam pretty soon in the microwave. The best thing to do is to kind of have the same policy for microwaves. Declare it for one thing, cover it for the other. That's the easiest thing. Again, covering it, it could mean, you know, the OU says you could even just put like a paper towel over it. You don't even necessarily have to like, I mean, obviously you can't put aluminum foil in the microwave. Do not put aluminum foil in the microwave. I learned that in college. If I learned one thing in college, it was... Do not put aluminum foil in the microwave. What's that smell?
What can happen?
Go ahead and try.
Start a fire.
Yeah, you'll start a fire real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It does not go well. Yeah, so...
I think that paper towel scenario, obviously steam is coming out from that paper towel. It's kind of like pushing it up, you know, and steam is going to get out from underneath.
Yeah, so it's a whole question because, I mean... In some ways it gets hot, but it's also not in very long. So it's a question of how much is really absorbed into the walls of the microwave. So we assume something is, and you know, it works a little differently. So as long as you're covering it, you're basically okay. If you can color it, you know, with plastic wrap or cellophane wrapping, which we do, the better. You just have to be aware. The problem with cellophane wrapping is if you go too long with the cellophane wrapping, it's gonna pop and just, you know, disintegrate, and you know, so you have to know what your cutoff point is on that. Another clue, you don't have to use the high setting on the microwave. It's funny because my wife has this like theory that it doesn't matter what number you press in the microwave, like power button 1 or 10. So no, it doesn't matter. Just do like, you know, 10 for 30 seconds, same thing as 9 for a minute. I'm like, no, there's certain differences. Like, I don't know. She like doesn't understand the She does high for everything, no matter what.
Yeah. Is that what everyone does?
They have settings for a reason. They have... Okay. All right.
You can put, like, say, there are things that you can put on top. I mean, that's not metal. if you're covering it, it may not be an actual lid.
Yeah, it sounds like it doesn't have to be a lid necessarily.
Like, say, a plastic thing that you
use. Yeah.
But most things you put on top have some hole in it for venting. Or else it's going to explode eventually.
I mean, a paper towel is good for that. I mean, figure out what you usually use your thing for.
I'll put things with a glass top on them, but the steam comes out. The top isn't sealed.
Fine, but again, as long as it's covered, then it's fine. Oh, you mean the
steam comes out the sides.
Does the cover on the pot?
Yeah, because it's not a seal.
Fine, but then we're not concerned about it coming back in. We're not concerned it's going to come back in, even if a little steam gets out.
Oh, so the steam can go. It's the steam coming back in. Yeah, is the problem.
Exactly. That's what we're worried about.
I was going to say that the steam goes out of the sides and therefore gets absorbed into the microwave. So if you're cooking dairy in your meat microwave, the moment you take that out or it comes up the sides, then it's already absorbed into the microwave, no? Even if it's for a second?
Say it trips at the microwave?
Yeah, right? Isn't that the problem?
I mean, that's... if it really came out, like, in droves, possibly. I think we assume if you're covering it, the amount that's going to get out is not going to be enough to really trafe it up.
So there has to be like a specific amount of...
It's a hard thing to define. It's a hard thing to define. But as long as it's covered, then, you know...
Okay, so can I just... So say you have a glass container with a lid, like a plastic lid that really can fit snugly. And you just release a little bit. So there is a vent, but you're saying...
Yeah, that would be okay.
That's still okay?
That would be okay. I think that would be okay. Especially for a parv thing, that definitely would be okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can you crush your microwave?
Yeah, you can crush your microwave.
So
microwaves are easy. Yeah.
That's not it. So then I get that. It's not so arduous.
How do you crush your microwave?
You crush your microwave, you clean it out. Clean out the walls of it. And then you just put something, a cup of water in there and put it on high for about 20 minutes and that vaporizes.
I was told 5 minutes.
If you read out 10, 20, I'll do more than 5.
Really? The Mashiach at Ralph's in San Diego.
what are you trying to get me to do here? Look, if you want to be saved, do 20 minutes. You need 10 minutes. It's not going to be the end of the world. But I don't know.
An hour.
The only thing is the glass plate is a bit of a question because glass, can you crush your glass? So, you know, if there really is a problem.
Is glass
I think glass get contaminated, though.
Yeah, so the whole question of glass, some people say cover the glass, replace the glass plate. If there really was something, some serious spillage
about,
or something.
What about my microwave that has a turntable with glass so the food's constantly rotating?
As I'm saying, that's the plate. That's part of it, or is that removable?
It's removable. You can clean it.
Right.
And
so
it's okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, some say you just leave it in, that gets kosher with everything else.
Wait. So yeah, glass can transfer.
There's a question about those plates. I'm not definitely an expert on exactly what those
plates.
They're
kind of like glass plastic.
Yeah, I know exactly what they are. They're funny. They're not like your normal. Yeah, they're not like glass.
They're almost like Pyrex.
So there's pure glass. What?
I always thought it was almost
Pyrex. Mine is. I found out when it broke.
You know.
Well, it's definitely glass based.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's like glass, like a crystal glass. I don't know.
You could have a drink at a bar that's not kosher. You can't contaminate. You know, I can't. Like, they can be serving non kosher food in there. And the glass is going to be
non kosher. No, I know. I understand.
Alright.
Alright, any other questions? Do I get the sinks at all or countertops? Should we get into that real quick?
Yeah.
Okay. So, sinks and countertops. These are things. Yeah. If you have to leave, it's late, so don't be concerned. I just want to take any questions now. Sinks. Sinks are there's the ideal way to do it, and then there's, you know, working with what you got. Ideally, if you have two sinks, you know, that are stainless steel, so you can kosher them. One's dairy, one's meat. Fine, that's like the easiest scenario. Even that can cause some complications. If people have one sink, the best thing to do is to just you can use the same sink for meat and dairy. Just have different racks, right? You know, like different racks that go down into the sink. Just keep in mind, number one, when we're dealing with washing dishes, We're usually not talking with water that's hot enough to be yatza let it bo. Because if it was hot enough to be yatza let it bo, you probably are not washing your dishes in that amount of heat. Because then you would be pulling your hands away. So almost by definition, right, the water in that you're washing this with is not yatza let it bo. So to really trafe something up in a sink is hard to do. Because, you know, even if your sink is meat and I'm washing my dairy dishes in them and I'm using hot water, to say I'm really trafing anything up is very hard. There's usually not enough heat there to really definitively say I've transferred taste. And then, again, we get to not bar not. So to say I wash my... I mean, it's very, very hard to say that you're going to really trafe anything up. So a lot of things is just good policy and trying to avoid meat and milk really, I don't know, connecting or, you know, you don't...
So you want to just separate the meat dishes and milk dishes when you're... I mean, you don't...
Yeah, you want to separate them.
You just...
Yeah.
You, I mean, just, as long as
the one time you can really get to yatza let bo is in a dishwasher, for example. So dishwasher should definitely be one or the other. Kosher dishwashers is a possibility. The OU and the CRC, and they have... They say, you know, let it lie for... Not porcelain, say plastic or stainless steel. You can go from meat to dairy... or kosher for Pesach if you don't use it for 24 hours and then run, let's say, two cycles with soap to just kind of kosher everything out. Koshering a trafe, like if you buy a new house or rent an apartment and there's an existing dishwasher, you won't find too many people who say you can actually kosher a dishwasher that had been used for non-kosher food. That's harder.
So mamish trafe is worse than comments?
Mamish trafe, yeah. And when it comes to koshering, because again, you know, before Pesach you can mamatel it and you can kosher it out. There are some leniencies even then. There are some leniencies, and if you change out your racks and you, again, run it a couple of times and wait 24 hours, there are definitely some who permit it. And it's case by case, so I'm not going to say yes or no. It's case by case. But ideally, you declare your dishwasher meat or dairy based on what you're going to use it most for, and then use it only for that. That's what I would say. Because it really gets hot. I mean, that's going to get 110 degrees, right? That's my assumption. What?
Can't go up to 180.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So,
because that sort of... to sterilize things.
Right. So the reason dishes, especially if your dishwasher is a concern, because if you're rinsing off dishes and then... Now you're rinsing off dairy dishes, and then some of that food gets onto the meat dishes, and then you put that meat dish into the dishwasher. Now there's dairy in there, and it's getting, you know, so whatever. You know, it's just, it's definitely a good thing to just be careful with it, just in general, to keep separate. You know, it's definitely a good policy. I'm just saying, b'di'eved, if something happens, you know, don't assume it's all treif, because, you know, if you wash your meat dishes in the dairy sink, to say it's treif is a very hard thing to say, but you know, it's definitely good policy and definitely avoids many complications if you're able to keep them separate.
Does it matter what the sink is made out of?
Well, if it's the advantage of stainless steel is you can kosher it. You can't kosher porcelain, but you can kosher steel. So, and steel is very easy. Stainless steel is very easy to kosher. So, if a stainless steel sink, it's very easy to if there's a mistake or a concern, or for Pesach, it's very easy to kosher it. Yeah, that's the only difference. So that's what I would say. Any questions on that?
If you have a meat sink and you are boiling milk, for instance, and you're pouring it out in the sink, does that then trafe the sink out?
That's probably the closest you can get. Yeah. If you really pour boiling hot milk directly into the meat sink.
Let's say you're doing pasta, though. You know,
But what are we talking about? Now we're not bar not already. And now you're already not bar not to Hetera to trafe up. That's you'd really have to pour out the boiling milk.
Boiling dairy, yeah.
Right, okay. Boiling milk, which could happen. You're right. That would be your worst case scenario. That would be your worst case scenario, where then you could have the possibility. Again, then it's only Iruay Kli Rishon. It's not even Kli Rishon because it's already out of the original vessel. So according to many opinions, it's already, by the time it hits the sink, it's already cooled down, so it will be okay. So even then there's, but That in that situation, certainly if it was stainless steel, I'd say let's kosher this sucker. Yeah, that you just created the worst possible thing you could do with a sink. Let's kosher this.
But if it's not stainless steel, you can't kosher the sink.
Can't kosher it. So, you know, if you inherit it, you have to assume it's quote unquote treif. So you just put down different mats or whatever grates in the bottom, and one's dairy and one's meat, and you try to.
So the pots don't actually touch the sink.
You try to avoid it. You know, try to avoid it if possible. Again, if a cold pot touches the cold sink, or even with warm water, it's not gonna treif anything up. It's impossible. But again, to avoid bad situations, yeah, that's probably the best thing to do. And countertops are kind of the same thing. Countertops, at times you'll put some things really hot on the countertop. You can literally take something out of the oven, you know, a meat pot onto it. Again, you're probably not cooking on the countertop, right? So to really get a clear reshown scenario is hard, because even the really hot pot, I'm putting a hot pot right out of the oven onto the countertop, but I'm not putting the food onto it. I'm putting the, right? So I'm transferring food from the pot.
And it's dry,
right? There's no liquid medium. So again, there's definitely plenty of scenarios where you can be more lenient, but it's a good idea to avoid those scenarios. And you know, ideally, if you can have different parts of your kitchen or different countertops that are meat ones or dairy ones, it's better.
Can you kosher a countertop?
You can kosher granite. That's why granite is definitely good. You can kosher granite countertops. If they're not granite countertops, you can't necessarily kosher it, but you can cover it, or you can basically cover it. There's no stainless. Oh, actually, we have stainless steel countertops here on the show. That's more like industrial.
The tile.
No, you can't kosher.
What about Korean?
Can't kosher. What?
Korean?
No.
Which is a fake sort of granite.
There's some fake granite that's kosherable. I've seen it. I think it's made in Israel. Like Caesar stone.
Okay.
I mean, they made it specifically.
So what do you do, you know, if you have your Korean counter? You don't keep it covered all the time. Do you just put things on trivets, or
ideally, yeah, then just put things on trivets.
If I took something hot off the stove, I put it on a trivet.
As a general rule, put hot things on trivets. You're okay. Meaning to put, if you have something cold and you put it down, you're not gonna have any halakhic problems with it. If milk spills onto it, you know, clean it up, and you won't have a problem. Yeah, so if at the very least you make sure anything hot or really hot goes on a trivet, and try to just focus it. I put my meat stuff here, my dairy stuff here, even if it's on a trivet, just to avoid those scenarios, you'll be okay.
If you're doing something like carving meat, you would do it not on the counter itself, but on something else.
Yeah, exactly.
So the meat doesn't come in contact.
Right, so just have a cutting board and you'll be fine. The cutting board can be on top of that countertop, and then you're cutting on the cutting board. Yeah, that'll be fine. It wouldn't, right? So even if you had a scenario where you've trafed up your countertop, right? You can't kosher it anymore. Yeah, the countertop touching the cutting board is not going to affect the cutting board whatsoever.
Okay.
Right.
And can you simplify your life if you get glass dishes with the whole dishwashing scenario?
If
glass isn't supposed to take up.
Right.
Meat or dairy, or if you have glass dairy plates.
If you have glass dairy plates.
Is it still going to be.
I mean, if you have meat dishwasher and glass dairy plates, can you put the glass dairy plates in the dishwasher?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it.
Can you use.
Because the problem with the dishwasher also is a lot of stuff gets stuck in the dishwasher. Then you got a lot of dairy stuff stuck in the dishwasher. And then you do your meat load, and then that stuff gets thrown around too. If you ever looked in those little dispenser, there's a lot of stuff in there, you know.
What about something like glasses? I'm drinking from glasses.
Yeah.
Can I use that glass for both the meat and dairy meal?
You could, certainly if it always remains cold. Yeah. Certainly if you wash the dishes. Technically you could. Certain drinking glasses are usually fine.
Customers have separate, isn't it?
Ideally, you can use separate. Ideally, you should try to use separate, but you know, data again. It's a good policy to have separate, if possible.
Because I know my mother said if it's glass, you can use it for both meat and dairy.
Yeah, so drinking glasses.
But also plates. Or mixing bowls or something.
So again, we assume glass doesn't absorb, but it's... There, you know, there are some reasons why we still don't like to do that, and but dishwashers, we're going to want to avoid, you know, avoid altogether.
So the wine glass was used, let's say, originally for a non-kosher wine. It can be koshered and used for kosher wine?
Can't kosher it. The question is, do you need to kosher it? For non-kosher wines, we'll if that's a real personal question, we'll discuss that.
No, general question.
It's like koshering glass for
pizza. It's a general question.
It's like you soak it for 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could... There are ways of koshering glass, right, for Pesach that we use, right? Soaking it for 3 days and things like that. Oh, and I'll say also, the koshering... It's funny, because I always get the idea of you know, you don't kosher things by putting them into dirt, which is something that a lot of... I don't know, that's a big misconception out there.
Silverware.
Right. It's not true. We didn't do a whole koshering section. Maybe we'll do that at another point, but... You know, that's it's something that's out there. I don't know how it became so popular, but you kosher things, certainly silverware, you kosher by boiling water and putting it in boiling water, you know.
Wait, put it in dirt. That's not a valid method?
No, that's only brought, that's so funny. There's this obscure statement to the Ramah, a very specific situation that they use something like that. It's like, how does everyone know this? It's like this obscure reference, in, you know? And like, everyone knows this. It's like, what about everything else? No one knows anything.
Even I've heard that.
Everyone's... Yeah, it's like, yeah, you stick... Yeah. You stick your fork in the pot for a year.
And you stick it
what? For a year? You catch her in a pot, and it'll take 20 minutes, and you can use it again. Yeah, don't... What?
I never heard that.
There you go.
Putting it in the dirt?
And how long did she keep it in for?
Probably 24 hours or something.
Okay.
In the dirt?
The people will keep it in forever. Or they put it in their backyard. And
yeah,
like,
that's where the dirt was.
Yeah. Oh. some people have, like, they have like flower pots in their house, and they like, you know, like, and like,
no,
the running joke in the family. I was talking to this person. She said, yeah, it was so funny. You know, these people who didn't keep kosher, non-Jews would come over and they'd ask, why do you have knives sticking out of your flower pots? And we'd laugh and say, ah, ha, ha, they don't know what they're talking about. And I'm thinking, you don't know what you're talking about. There's like, what, you're laughing at them.
They should be laughing at you.
What?
That sounds like nonsense.
I know, I heard stories about Robin's grandmother before Pesach. You know?
Yeah, I don't...
She would do it. The whole front yard did all in silverware.
It's amazing. I don't know. I don't know.
Serious. I mean, his father said, I walk up and I didn't know what the heck was going on. They're all the silverware in the...
Have you heard this? Do you guys hear this?
Oh, putting a knife in dirt, yeah.
Knife in
dirt. Like if you trace the knife, you put it in the dirt to, like, knock off the tray.
Right, so the only time it comes up, they say you put the knife in the dirt because the knife has edges. Uh-huh. So you need a hard surface to get everything out of it. But it doesn't kosher it. All it can do is remove, maybe it might be effective in removing any content,
yes.
Like sandpaper, right? So it'll remove, and then you still have to kosher it.
Right.
It wouldn't kosher it. I mean, that's the concept of what it could be. You're basically, you know, because you can't kosher something until you removed all the actual food on it that's visible.
Use the knife sharpener.
Yeah, so that's I think that's what it was. If you really grate it into the ground to get it out.
I mean, that exposes it to worms. And I mean, you know,
worms are not kosher, though.
Well, right.
Get protein.